Hello, this is Marcy from the Super Podcast. And before we start our podcast, I just want to, for us at Super Podcast, to give our condolences to those in Colorado that, you know, to the people that were affected over the shooting that happened at the midnight screening of The Dark Knight Rises. We're obviously very saddened and disturbed that something like this happened. And, you know, having been in Colorado for, you know, a good few weeks on my vacation, I really love the place, and hearing something like that happen there is very sad, especially after the state has been dealing with, you know, the worst fires and people losing their homes and everything. I mean, it's just very tragic, everything that's happened there. So we obviously want to just offer our condolences to, you know, the state as a whole, just about with all the things that are happening. And, you know, we really hope that things improve greatly in the future. So we just wanted to say that and enjoy the podcast.
Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Hi. I'm Morgan Freeman.
No, I'm Morgan Freeman.
Not that bad.
No, I'm Morgan Freeman.
Swear to me.
No, I won't swear to you, Batman.
Fair enough.
And Morgan Freeman agrees. But anyway. No, I'm actually in the terrible Australian beach of mine. I hope you're all doing very well today. And how are you today, Marcy?
I'm pretty tired, but I'm getting better. I can't really complain, so. Just sleepy, cool. Tired, and exhausted, and I need a body transplant because I don't want this one no more. It just doesn't work.
I will say this, Marcy. After this podcast, you'll be more awake than ever because, you know, that's what podcasts do.
It can have that effect. We'll see. Otherwise, I might just fall asleep as we finish. Because unlike some people that are guesting on this podcast, I don't fall asleep during the podcast.
Oh, snap.
Although that was absolutely hilarious, and I have no complaints.
Exactly. And speaking of, and if anyone's wondering who this particular guest is, he's making a return back after being on the show a while ago. I can't remember exactly, but I know it was a long, long time. And of course, he is our favourite piece of Canadian bacon. And that, of course, is the one, the only, Mr. Nick Bosworth. Hello, Nick, how are you?
Sizzling bacon. Ah.
I thought that was Bane's breathing. He's like the
Armada. I am Gotham's bacon. Bacon.
Well, you know what?
Snap necks and see, talk like Shakespeare.
He kind of was like Darth Vader because he like did. He kind of did some Darth Vader reactions, but we'll get into that later because we need to.
And by the way, the sleeping episode still remains the most talked about.
It does,
as far as I know, as far as anybody's ever told me, and all the people who laughed at me sleeping, but.
It's definitely one of the most infamous episodes.
Just funny because now we're doing another episode where my car got hit by somebody the other day, and this is the first podcast I've done with you guys in a long while. So I'm wondering if I'll fall asleep because I'm so tired during this one.
Yes.
Tell.
We will find out. But of course, with all the Batman talk, this is the Dark Knight Rises discussion, and the film has been now released for a few days as we're recording this. Almost a week since Bede and I first saw it at the Aussie premiere at the IMAX, and I've seen it three times, since then, which just happened to be that way. I only paid for one, one of those visits, one of those trips.
For you.
We should add that this is a spoiler-heavy discussion, so please only keep listening if you've seen it or if you don't care about spoilers because you don't intend to see it or you just don't care, I don't know. But it is a spoiler-heavy discussion, and I've warned you, and if you're going to complain to us that we spoiled it, I'm giving you the middle finger right now because I've already put the disclaimer. So, there we go. That's right. Thank you, Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm Morgan Freeman. But anyways.
I'm Michael Caine.
Awesome. So, Marcy, since you've seen it three times already, why don't you give us your overall opinion on The Dark Knight Rises?
Okay, well, seeing it three times, it still kind of holds up, but there are just a few little, like, things that I notice, like little mistakes that you kind of notice when you see a movie so many times in such a short span of time. But that's, every single movie has that. And, you know, it is the longest movie of the three. And even at that running time, it doesn't really feel that long, which is good. It's pretty well paced, probably towards more the second half. I think it has some issues in, like, the first act, just because it's trying to fit in so much and fit in so much story and new characters and introductions. So I think it kind of, it's just a lot to take in for that first part. But I think it flows really well throughout the rest. And it's, you know, the stakes have been upped and, you know, Chris Nolan just does some incredible stuff with it. And, I mean, as a whole, I'd probably put it with Begins on that same kind of level with, a score rating, with The Dark Knight undoubtedly being my favourite of the three. But this is pretty incredible. It's extremely epic. There's so much going on and, you know, they introduce a lot of new things and there's a couple of new things that are pretty awesome, which those would be the Selina Kyle character and the character of John Blake. Which I really liked a lot. And I liked how they handled those stories. With the rest of the old crew, they're all really awesome. I like kind of the story arcs that they place for everyone. As for the villain, we had Bane. And I was excited to see how they would handle the character because, as we know, Batman and Robin, it was just a joke. No, it was beyond being a joke. And I like how they kind of handled it, but I don't think they're ever going to recreate the greatness that they managed with the Joker. But he's still, like, a very brute force, and his plans are just insane. And we understand, like, as the movie progresses, why he's doing what he's doing. And then we have, the Talia Al Ghul character, and I knew that was going to be there. It wasn't a surprise when she shows up. And I thought that was fine because it does go back to the first one and what they set up. But I don't know, it almost didn't really need to be needed, but, you know, it was there and it was fine. It was just great stuff. It's so, like, well handled, and you know, Christopher Nolan just doesn't make a film. He has something to say, and he's obviously, there's a lot for him that he's putting forth through this movie with just current things in society, with poor and the rich, with terrorism, with just, you know, people pretty much taking over a city. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on there, and you can either choose to understand what he's saying or you can just simply view it as a film. That's just my ramble that I can think of while I'm half asleep.
And Nick, what did you think of Dark Knight Rises?
A lot of the points that Marcy said are pretty valid to what I thought. I pretty much have come to the conclusion, as Marcy and I know many others have said, that the flow of from Batman Begins to Dark Knight Rises is pretty much the exact same flow as the original Star Wars trilogy was from A New Hope to Return of the Jedi, where A New Hope was excellent. Empire Strikes Back was an all-time classic in terms of films. And then Return of the Jedi was fantastic, but it didn't quite match up to Empire. So, and that's pretty much how I see the Batman films going as well, where I thought Dark Knight Rises was fantastic, but I knew from the start when they even started production, you know, they said the villain was going to be Bane, which I was very excited about, and how they were going to do it sounded great, but you knew that they were never going to top Heath Ledger as Joker. They just can't do it. Bane is a very interesting character, but he's not that interesting. And he's not frightening as Heath was. So as a whole, I still thought Tom Hardy was brilliant. He played the character to absolute perfection. But in terms of the story, you had to know Batman Begins in and out in order to get what was actually going on in Dark Knight Rises. It actually almost seemed to make the Dark Knight itself kind of a... It almost, like, The Dark Knight Rises was the true sequel of Batman Begins, because it was the ongoing story of, you know, the League of Shadows, or, well, League of Assassins, technically, their fight to destroy Gotham and whatnot, and it kind of left The Dark Knight as its own entity, in a way, other than the, you know, connection with Harvey Dent and Batman taking the fall, etc. But I thought... The first half of The Dark Knight Rises was fantastic. I love the setup of the story. Yeah, it was a little rushed in the beginning to try and introduce everybody, but in general, I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. The second half was also amazing. There were some little character cameos, especially in the second half, that were very funny. Big spoiler, Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow.
I pretty much squealed when he showed up.
I heard a squeal.
We all... what he was doing and what he was wearing, and, you know, it was like, oh, this is fucking priceless. And, you know, and then you look at the characters. I thought Anne Hathaway, I had faith in her from the beginning. I was one of the few, because she is a good actress. And there are still people out there who think she's ugly as hell. I think they're fucking blind. But I thought she was excellent as Selina Kyle. Very different from Michelle Pfeiffer's. She didn't have that psychotic side to her that Michelle had in Tim Burton's film. But she played the character beautifully with the sweet and innocent. And then, you know, instantly kicking in the, you know, freaking full of guts. Full of intelligence, you know, quick-witted Catwoman, and even though she's never referred to as Catwoman. But she had a great chemistry with Christian Bale. She's just great all around. Again, like I said, Tom Hardy, fantastic as Bane. Fucking massive. I couldn't believe the muscle he put on for that role. The particular scene when we're introduced to him in the sewer, when he's got his shirt off, it's like, holy shit, man. And all of it was real. And fake about it, but also, as Marcy said, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as John Blake, fantastic, did a great job, great ending for him, and Marion as Miranda Tate / Talia al Ghul, very good, a little late in the game, but, and you, like Marcy said, you could see that coming a mile away, especially when we've all been trying to guess if she is going to play Talia Ghul in the film. And we all saw the photos of her being escorted by our men. It's like, come on, she's Talia Ghul. But, yeah, some great set designs. I love the new Batcave. Just the bat itself, the flying glider he had was fucking awesome. Just overall, just a great film. Yeah, there were a few little plot holes here and there, but... overall, I thought it was a very fitting end to the trilogy. Very, very, very fitting end. And whoever takes over next has their hands full.
Cool. for my overall feelings, I have to admit, I said this to Marcy the other night when after we saw the film at the premiere. I did really like it, but I felt like the first half of the movie was a bit convoluted because it was setting up, you know, Bane's plan and everything to take over Gotham. I felt that one sort of convoluted, and I was picking at it and all that. But when I went and saw it again the following day, I actually found that half actually pretty easy to follow on the second viewing. And I think the overall... Sorry,
Dave. Because you're absorbing so much.
Yeah, because it's a film that I feel like you can't... Like, it's a lot with a lot of Nolan's films. That they're not films that you can easily process on the first viewing. You've got to at least watch them at least twice to fully grasp what they're doing. And then the same thing happened to me with also... The Dark Knight, Inception, The Prestige and all that. And that's what I think makes Nolan an interesting director. Because he, like Marcy says, in this film, it's a much more grander film. It's a much more ambitious film. And it's much more epic in scope than previous two films were, even though they were pretty epic in their own ways. But I did love this movie, and I wouldn't say it. I do agree it is the most flawed of the three, and I think that's more to do on a script level than anything else, because like you guys have said, I feel like some aspects of the story I don't think were quite developed. Some, like, it's a film that I feel, probably the best word to describe it is a bit overplotted, because like Nolan sort of tries to cram in so much plot into this story. But I think, in a way, the film kind of goes into those trappings that most third films in any superhero franchise usually succumb to. But I think for pretty much 95% of most part, I think Nolan does it extremely well, that he is able to make it all work, like the plot and all these characters and all that. He's able to make all that work. And also, but although the movie does tend to rush a bit as well, because I'd like to sort of, like, especially in the middle section where Bruce Wayne is in the pit, I felt that sort of section of the movie was a bit rushed, and I would love to sort of, if it was, took its time so we can absorb that scene and everything. And of course, you know, some dialogue sort of came off a bit more exposition-y rather than naturally, but the thing I love about the film is, of course, the performances, Nolan's direction, the music. It's just that epic grandness that I really loved about the film. Like, that was pretty much the first word I thought of after I watched the film was epic, and that best describes this film. Is it perfect? No, like I said, it's the most flawed of the three, but I found the overall film itself to be satisfying, even though I could figure out exactly where the movie was going to go in the last half, but that didn't bother me because if I were Nolan and I was ending this series, that would be the way I would end the series, and I think he does a fantastic job with that. And it's a great end to a pretty brilliant comic book series, and and it's going to be hard to top, because usually a lot of films like this, the third one usually doesn't quite live up to the, and usually some consider as a disappointment, and for some people out there, Dark Knight Rises might be a disappointment to them, and I can understand why, but I think it's a film that I think will be better appreciated more on more viewings. And people will look back and say that was a great ending. Is it better than Dark Knight? Definitely not, because that to me is one of the greatest comic book films ever made. But as an ending to a series, it's the perfect ending. Like in it, and it does it in a very satisfying way.
Yeah, it's very, 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 very difficult to top The Dark Knight. That movie got sprung on us, you know, 4 years ago. And I mean, we just got out of Iron Man, and we're all thinking to ourselves, you can't top Iron Man. You know, Iron Man was absolutely brilliant, you know, and then that sprung on us, and I'll never forget seeing it in IMAX. You just didn't know what the fuck to say when it was done. It's like, oh my God, this is just brilliant. And then Dark Knight Rises gets announced, and I could see why Nolan was hesitant to do a third film.
Yeah.
Because he probably knew, I can't top this.
Yeah.
You know, go on a high note, but I still think he, like you said, he went on a very high note, despite some flaws in the story. Mm. You know, it's like, it's just like you said, you absorb more with more viewings.
Yeah, you definitely will. And that's the kind of filmmaker he is. Like, everything that he does, you need to see it again. Because he definitely puts a lot in there, and he puts a lot of thought into it. Yep. And I think this is kind of like why this is the way it is. It's definitely a way better third film than a lot of series have. Because there is, he cared about what he was doing. And because there is so much, like, you know, he put a lot of like politics in there. I mean, he obviously, you know, had put thought and care into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got to do what he felt like was the way to end it, I guess. And I know that there's a lot of arguments that it's got too much politics, it doesn't all make sense, blah, 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 but at the end of the day, it is a film. Yeah. Films are there to entertain us.
Yeah, I don't think it's a... I don't think the movie has a political agenda at all, but I feel like he's just taking topical things that are happening to us in the world right now and putting them in this film for entertainment value. And he did the same thing with The Dark Knight as well. And what I love about Nolan is that he could have easily have just made these kind of fun, goofy Batman films, you know, like Burton or even to a lesser extent Schumacher did, but he wanted to have a lot more weight to these films by bringing up interesting themes and ideas as well. Like, that's why I feel like the series feels so grand and epic, because it deals with those aspects rather well. And I mean, when you sort of watch not just this film, but also The Dark Knight, you just realize how deep and that film is with its themes. And this film does that as well, and as well as Batman Begins. And that's why I sort of love this series, because they try to be more than just superhero films.
Yeah. Superhero film. It was pretty much the first superhero film ever grounded in reality. Whereas, you know, like, or the first series anyway, the Rises wasn't as grounded in reality. It kind of had more of the...
It was the most comic booky of the series.
Yeah, the most comic booky with the bad, and even Bane, like, at the beginning, I was like, ugh, he's going to be tricky. You know, how are they going to make him, you know, how are they going to ground him in reality? And they didn't exactly explain very, like, you know, a hell of a lot about, or maybe they, I remember they said something about a plague at one point in the pit, and I gotta see it again to get all the details, but, yeah, it was definitely the most cartoony, but at the same time, he keeps it so realistic, and, I think that's what appeals to people the most, and we're able to relate with a lot of the characters, and, you know, a lot of the ideals of Batman, and, but yeah, it's just fantastic. Like, and the amount of comic book references that Nolan has, you know, from, you know, Nightfall and, you know, what was it, last, oh, I can't remember, the taking over Gotham.
No Man's Land? Was it that one? Yeah.
You know, things like that, and he really gives a shit about the source material at the same time, you know?
Yeah, they're sort of like not flat-out adaptations of their stories. He sort of like takes bits and pieces from different Batman stories and sort of puts them together and and creates something of his own.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I think the number one moment of the entire movie, and I think everyone will probably agree with me, and it was the moment in the IMAX theater I was in where every single person just went was watching Bane picking Batman up to break his back. I can't even describe the reaction, because I literally lifted out of my seat. I didn't think Nolan was going to do it.
Oh, this early in the movie.
That's what I mean. I was like, I thought maybe he was going to have him beat Batman to a pulp. But when he actually did what every comic book fan prayed for, to lift him up in the air and break his back like that, it was just absolutely fucking insanity. There was cheers and applause. It was crazy.
Although I did find it funny that his back healed much quickly after that, even though it took like a few months for his back to heal.
I don't know how easily he broke his... I don't think he broke his back.
Yeah, I don't think he broke it, but he just sort of like badly injured it.
I think it was meant to be more, you know, he broke him.
Yes, he broke his spirit and he broke his body. Mm. I loved the dialogue of that scene. And that's another thing. I really give The Dark Knight Rises, and this is a bit of a shout-out to Wally Pfister, the cinematographer. My God, did the fight scenes look so good in this film, which is hilarious because with Batman Begins, it was so bad. With the shaky cam and you were in close, you couldn't see anything. With the fights of Bane versus Batman, you could see every punch, every kick, every block, and it just felt so powerful seeing everything up close and steady. It was just fantastic.
And you know what's interesting about that scene? If you watch that scene again, you notice that there's no score at all during that entire scene.
I was going to mention that they don't actually have any music to it. And
it's the two Titan.
Yeah, it's the perfect kind of just confrontation of those characters because he's confident, he knows what he's up against, and this is what Alfred warned him about.
Yeah,
and he failed. There.
That was a little strange too. The absence of Michael Caine in the second half of the film. I that was one thing. I was like, at one point, I was like, where the hell's Alfred? I was like, yeah, wow, he literally left. Like there was no mention of him until the very end of the film. I'm like, would have thought he'd been more involved, but the scenes that Michael was in, I got to give him credit. There's a particular scene with him and Bale where Caine reveals a few things from the last film that just batters their relationship, and Caine just soaked it. He was incredible, and he did the famous Michael Caine broken voice, and which I had to crack up laughing, but he was just fantastic. It was probably the best acting that Caine's done in all three films, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, as the same. I think Morgan Freeman did his best work in The Dark Knight for the three films, just because he's more involved, and there's a lot of like things that go against his morals that he challenged like Bruce on, and I think that really got a great performance out of Morgan Freeman. But he's not. I mean, he's in this, but he's not in it as much.
And he I was think there to serve the plot, really.
Yeah, his performance in The Dark Knight, I think, because of how it involves his character more and in certain ways, I think that definitely got out his best performance of the three. And I cut beat off, so you can say what you needed to.
I have to say, like, I got to give my favorite performance in the movie, of course, is Anne Hathaway. Like, I agree with Nick when he said earlier, like, I knew she could pull it off. But she sort of went far beyond my expectations. I kind of
agree.
I knew that she nailed it as soon as, like, in the scene when she gets caught out by Bruce Wayne for stealing his mum's pearls. Like, that's like she's playing all sweetness and, oh, I didn't mean to come in here. And it's like, you know, the safe is uncrackable. And that expression of hers changes from that. Well, I knew at that moment she nailed the character.
When she kicked the cane from under him. And that I was like, oh, that is so what she would fucking do.
Yeah.
You know, like she doesn't give a shit. You know, it's all about her and her best interests. And yeah, I agree.
And she does have a character arc in the film as well, because and the film perfectly captures the essence of Catwoman, because she sort of like goes back between being a good guy or a bad guy and all that, sort of thinking about herself, and then eventually starts to think of others as well. And I think Nolan sort of perfectly captured that.
Mm.
And plus, she looked fantastic in her Catwoman outfit.
Pretty much looked fantastic in every single little thing.
I'm not exactly sure how she could run around and beat the shit out of people in the boots that she wore, because I have boots that are the same, they're just not up to my knees, and yeah, walking in them is a little bit of a struggle some days. So that I kind of had to suspend my disbelief.
Oh yeah, you always get, hey, to look sexy, you just gotta suspend sometimes, but
yeah, basically.
I'm surprised that Bale can do half of what he does in that suit.
Well, that's why they adjusted it, because he could not, like, really move in the original one, and he got, like, claustrophobia in there, so they had to change it so he could actually fucking move in there.
I love how they integrated that into the script, too, you know, about turning his head to get out of the driveway and all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, overall, it's just like Bede said, it was just a much grander story, very little CGI, which was incredible. I mean, if you watch all the behind the scenes, they built full scale, you know, moving, working replicas of the bat, and all the tumblers are real, and it's just unbelievable what they can get away with without using CG. And Gary Oldman also gave another loved the little bit where, big spoiler, Batman reveals his true identity to Gordon.
And his reaction was, Bruce Wayne?
he didn't even directly say who he was. He said, about the kindness of, you know, giving a little boy, you know, your coat.
And telling him that the world's not going to end and all that.
Is he going to put it together? Is he going to put it? And he did. Bruce Wayne?
I love that reaction.
One of the things I love about the movie is just, like, little callbacks to, like, the other movies in, like, little ways. Like, I showed you guys a GIF before, like, the way that, Bane, like, he always has his hands up to his chest when he's holding his jacket and all that, and Ra's al Ghul did that in the first film, and also, like, shots of the Pip when, but where Bruce is climbing up him, they look resentment of, like, the well that he fell down in, like, how they...
And his father coming like down that. To tell him, you know, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
And also, what's interesting, though, is, like, when Talia al Ghul reveals herself, she stabs Bruce in the back, and it kind of calls back to what Ra's al Ghul said in the first film. If somebody stands in your way, you get a knife, you go up behind him, and you stab him in the back, which I thought was, like, a... That's what I mean. It was interesting watching, because I saw all three films at the IMAX in an awesome marathon, and it's awesome just to see those little moments, like, you know, just calling back to little moments, whether they be through dialogue or scenes or even shots as well. Like, Nolan had put a lot of thought into it, which I found was really impressed by.
And then I have to say again, once again, Cillian Murphy, awesome.
Yeah, actually, I want to bring up a lot of, a lot of, like, little roles and things. Like, I remember we were all like, oh, my God, Matthew Modine's going to be in this. Like, what happened to him?
Technically, the Joker was in this movie, if you think about it. Yeah, right.
But it was just kind of like, because you said, you know, Nolan likes to work with people that, you know, bringing them out of almost an obscurity.
Yeah, like a Tarantino type thing, you know.
Because, you know, Modine's been in stuff, but it's not been in, like, theatrical big stuff. And then I'm doing a podcast. Thank you, Mom.
He gave David Bowie, like... I was never that big fan of Lapins, but I think David Bowie's best role was in The Prestige.
But it's kind of funny. And then, like, you know, I was excited to see Matthew Modine in this, and I thought, like, he did good. Like, his character was a jackass, but he played it well, so I was happy to see him, and, you know, it's good to see him again. And yeah, I kind of was reminded that I used to crush on him big time back in the day.
Yeah.
Shut up. Oh, my card arrived. Anyway, then we had, like, one person I didn't even realize was in it till the movie, like, was on, was Ben Mendelsohn. Which I was like, I was looking at him going, is that Ben Mendelsohn? Being that, you know, he is, like, an Aussie actor who's, you know, kind of, you know, being in a lot of, like, recent US movies since he kind of broke out with Animal Kingdom, which we've praised many, many times on this podcast.
Who did that guy play?
Daggett.
He played the Jack Daggett, the
Daggett.
The rival, you know, business guy who wants to pretty much make Wayne poor and steal his business.
Yeah, and he basically was the puppet that they used to be able to bring Bane in.
Yeah, Daggett was. I couldn't believe when I heard the name, because as soon as I heard Daggett, the whole animated series of Batman flashed through my mind. I was like, oh my god. Like, we're really going deep now, but
yeah, played by Ben Mendelsohn.
What's interesting about, like, I thought when Mendelsohn, like, I saw him in the last trailer. I saw him for like a second.
I didn't even notice. Ben?
Like, yeah. I just watched it, and I bet he's going to be like a few people in this movie, and just like have a bit blink you might miss him part. But he's actually in the movie for at least the first half, for all of the first half.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said, he got, Bane said my favorite line in the whole movie to him, which was, "I'm Gotham's Reckoning." Even though that's not how he says it at all.
Yeah,
my favorite Bane line of the whole movie is, "What a lovely voice!"
Oh my god, yeah.
That had got the biggest laugh in the theater. It was like that.
No, people were actually giggling at that kid singing. I think that line just made people laugh because everyone was kind of giggling at the at the kid's voice, singing voice, which is kind of mean.
Well, that's the whole thing. And by the way, the stadium bit was fucking awesome. The trailer didn't do it credit.
Yeah. Bane must really hate gridiron football.
He must. But that whole kind of... you know, when his plan comes through, like, he pushes the button and everything's just getting blown up. I mean, that was just... So it was hard to watch, though, but it was just like, whoa.
Yeah, I know. It's like, that's the carpet on your natural eyeliner. No!
I know. I like that they kind of used Nesta Carbonell in the last... he wasn't in the first one, was he? No.
No, he was in the second.
He was in the second, because he used to play... I've gone blank now.
Bat Manuel.
That's it. on the tick. Which I thought was kind of funny. But there was a dude, and I can't remember his name. He was the congressman that Selena takes for her leverage.
Was it?
Her backup plan. No, that guy was also in Lost, but I can't think of his name.
Is it Brett Cullen? Because I think that's who it might be.
I'm not sure because I can't think of his name, but he played, I think, Goodwin on Lost. And I just thought it was funny because Nesta Carbonell was also on Lost. And that was like another little cameo. And yeah, you're right, it was Brett Cullen.
Yeah, and I'm just laughing because, like, all of a sudden, Christopher Judge from Stargate just shows up out of nowhere for like a second in the movie.
I know. And it's like, that's thingy. I did that a lot in this movie with all these, like, cameos, because then there was, like, God, I forgot his name. Desmond Harrington.
From Dexter.
Or if you're a total, like, TV geek like me, you would also know him from Gossip Girl. and...
See, I don't know TV that well, so that's why...
and I'm, like, going, that's what's his name. I kept saying that to Bede through the whole movie. That's what's his name. And Bede's just looking at me going, that's Desmond Harrington. Because I was so excited, I, like, forgot everyone's names. And I'm like, that's what's his name? And it's like, that's Christopher Judge.
You know who else?
Man was in a TV shows as well. Like, I couldn't quite place him either. Who? I knew he had been on that Dirt with Courtney Cox.
Who?
And
who? Who'd you say?
The guy who was Bane's right-hand man.
Yeah, he was last in that failed superhero show, No Ordinary Family. He was the main character in that too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And also, I'm just looking like who, you know, young Ra's al Ghul was played by Armie Hammer's body double from.
You should love him then.
Yeah, Josh Pent. And I kind of feel sorry for this guy now because, like, he's been in two successful movies and you never actually either see his face or actually hear
him. Yeah, you saw his face kind of here.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
How can we forget Liam Neeson's cameo in?
We knew that was going to happen because of the reports, and I'm like, oh, he'll be in a flashback or something. He kind of appeared like as a hallucination.
He was. It was awesome seeing him with that, you know, little goatee and the, you know, fucking in the gorgeous suit and all that. I was like, oh man, he's back.
Gotta love the appearance.
It's like, oh shit.
Yeah, and it's funny because before the movie started, they played the trailer to Taken 2. And I'm just like, I've seen that trailer so many times. It just takes the first shot, and I'm like, Taken 2.
Yeah.
Which it looks like silly fun.
The IMAX screening, which was disappointing. I was hoping for Man of Steel. And
I got that yesterday when I saw it again. It's kind of a little like, I don't know. It's kind of like this is a Superman teaser trailer because it's only at the end where he's like zooming off in the air. But I kind of think he looks a bit funny the way he's flying. But I love the Russell Crowe as Jor-El voiceover.
Yeah, that was a good voiceover.
I remember, like, some people were like, oh, like, Russell Crowe doesn't have the godly voice of Marlon Brando. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? You think Marlon Brando had a godly voice? And
I wouldn't even consider it. It's just, Marlon Brando was just memorable because his voice was just so, like, it hits you when he speaks. But
he was, but I think Russell Crowe had just as much impact.
What voice. I felt with Russell Crowe's voice was just, it's this very fatherly thing.
Yeah.
Rather than it not being, you felt more of like a connection with it. Not saying anything against anything that's mean. I just felt there was like a kind of, a, you know, kingship, more of like a fatherly connection with just keeping it kind of not as grand. Well, I think they kind of built up Marlon Brando to be really grand with his talk.
Well, I like listening to Kevin Costner try to sound emotional.
poor Kevin Costner. I have to say, like, I like all the little cameos in the movie, but if there was one cameo that kind of bothered me, not only because, like, it was Juno Temple who played Catwoman's little sidekick.
The thing is,
she's not bad in the movie. It's just like that character could easily have been taken out of the movie, and it wouldn't have affected the story at all. Like there was
no,
like
her character is completely pointless.
Yeah, it's like they set her up to be kind of like there, you know, something, you know, they might be doing something with her, but then they just completely drop her altogether. I don't know. Maybe she had more scenes and they were cut out. I don't know, but
I don't even think I have seen her in anything else. Maybe Saint Trinian's. Which is sad to say that I've seen that movie. But
well, she's sort of like in every figure at the moment.
But that's about it. I know that we'll see her in Killer Joe coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, I know she was clearly, like, she was there just to, you know, help the little, you know, inconveniences of Catwoman and then fuck off for the rest of the movie. You know, it's like...
Yeah, basically.
What is the relationship? But then again, I was thinking to myself, this movie is 2 hours and 45 minutes. We can't use any more supporting stories at this point.
That was sort of like one of the sort of like when I was talking about the flaws, like certain characters or little stories and all that. You could easily have taken out and it probably might have been a much more tighter film. But there's one thing I want to talk about, and one performance in particular is Joseph Gordon-Levitt as John Blake. Now, I'm going to gloat. For the next 5 minutes, because in the movie, about over a year ago, I said this on Movie Fan Central, like as that when Joseph Gordon-Levitt was announced to star in the movie, I made a prediction, and I got it here. I just had to find it somewhere. I made a prediction where I said, "I bet any money," and I quote, "I bet any money Joseph Gordon-Levitt is playing Robin." In The Dark Knight Rises. When I said that, everyone was like scoffing at me saying, oh no, that's not going to happen. Nolan doesn't like Robin and blah, blah, blah. And what does happen at the very end when he goes to, we find out at the very end that his real first name is Robin. Okay. Maybe he's not the Robin, like Dick Grayson.
Well,
but,
it's more of a nod to not that.
He's
but...
going to be the next Batman. He's not going to be Robin.
Or not.
Because he can be Batman. Which he says in the film.
And I've sort of been thinking about this ever since I saw the film. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt does a great job in the film, and he has a great character arc. I thought he'd just be like a minor character, but he actually has
he was a main character.
The Batman.
He's like, and what I've found interesting is like I know a lot of people sort of don't like Robert and all that type of stuff, but I think I kind of, in a way, kind of wish Nolan had the guts to make the character named Dick Grayson, and I'll say this why, because I kind of I've always imagined if Nolan actually did say Nolanize Robin, like I think the character of John Blake is what Robin would have been like if he was Nolanized.
Exactly. It works for what it is, because Robin is a character that I think it works more in the comics or in a cartoon series. It doesn't seem weird. But when you put it to film, it kind of feels weird. It's not what it's meant to be, because it just feels like they're really boning each other on the side. with this, it wasn't like that at all, and I think that's how it works for him. But I just thought it was a bit silly, like, having his real name be Robin.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't need that, because we already know that he's, like, the sidekick. They could have said, oh, his name was... Richard Grayson.
Yeah.
You know, and we would have been like, oh, well, he could become like Nightwing because he's already been Robin in a way. Yeah,
Queens, dead wives.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean, Marcy. It's like he could have easily just named the character Dick. I bet any money he probably would have wanted to call him Dick Grayson, but I guess, you know, with making, not to get fan backlash, he probably just renamed him
They John just Blake. Figured, we'll just say Robin and they'll get the hint.
Yeah.
Well, the surprise, obviously, at the end. I mean, we could all pretty much see it, you know, coming from a mile away that, you know, he was going to end up being, you know, the way the movie ends. But, you know, and everybody's like, oh, fucking Nolan lied to us. He lied to us. You know, the Robin's in the movie. I'm like, well, technically, no.
No, exactly.
Robin is not in this movie. He might become Robin. But technically, he's really just going to become the next Batman, and that's where Nolan cleverly leaves it.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that he could either be his own hero taking over from Batman or just be the new Batman, but they kind of finish off Batman being in there because they all know that he's, like, died. That's why I kind of figured, you know, he could be like a Nightwing kind of thing. If they had called him Dick Grayson, I mean, Dick Grayson becomes Nightwing, and I think there was a storyline where he becomes the new Batman at Once Upon a Time. Yeah. But, yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
I said this to you after when we saw the movie, Marcy. I was kind of surprised because I just assumed, like, John Blake was actually the grown-up version of the kid from Batman Begins that Batman saved.
Yeah.
And I thought, in a way, that probably would have been how he would have found out he was really Bruce Wayne, because you've got to remember, he did hear Rachel say out loud, Bruce?
Yeah, but there's probably many Bruces.
Oh, well, that's true, but, you know, put two to two together, so... but I think... it was a little convenient how he sort of figured out Bruce in this way. Like, it's fine, but it seems a bit too convenient for me. I don't know. But
the funny thing, like, even if you cut out the Robin bit, I thought Joseph really played an honest-to-goodness cop.
Yeah.
I thought he just played the perfect rookie cop who was trying to make it, and his chemistry with Gary was... excellent.
Yeah, they definitely need to do a movie together. Another one.
That's the thing. He walked like a cop. He talked like a cop. You know, everything, you know, everyone, like Matthew Modine keeps calling him a hothead and you know, things like, it was just perfect.
That was perfect. Because, like, I liked how they had that back and forth where he's like, he's a hothead and, you know.
He's hot.
Yeah.
But,
what a great thing, right? So... you know, with most of the things he said. And Matthew Modine looked like a jackass as much.
Exactly. That's what his character was. And Modine can play a jackass well.
Although so I did find it a bit funny, like, just thinking of the plot holes of the movie, I thought it was funny that they set the entire police force down in the sewers. I don't know why it cracks me up. I don't know. Yeah. I just found it a little too convenient, like sending all the police forces. I mean, you could send half of them, but all.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you could understand them doing that, like, because the city just isn't under as much crime as it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there is a reference to, like, we'll be chasing down library books. That was the worst accent ever. I can't do accents or anything. But, yeah.
I agree with that.
But at the same time, they were kind of realizing that there was a bigger threat than they were imagining to be. And then, yeah, once they kind of like, oh, shit, why do we do that? Yeah, they literally, everything just comes sinking down on them.
I think one more thing before we sort of finish off our review, and I think this is probably the thing people want us to talk about, is the ending. What did you guys think of the ending? Did you guys cry at the ending?
No, because I knew he wasn't dead. And I don't know, there's things because he takes out the autopilot thing. I mean, that's what I think he took out of
the that was like
that's the autopilot.
No, I don't think it was the autopilot. I think it was like a transmitter just to make sure his plane.
Yeah, but it had to do with the autopilot because Morgan Freeman says, "Can you do without the autopilot?" And he just off throws him and says, "Oh, it doesn't work anyway."
I don't know.
But he must have had something. I think he must have had something, a different kind of autopilot that he worked in for it.
Yeah.
Because he needed to do that. Like, I think, you know, they kind of cut to scenes of him in the pod, and I don't think that's of him actually flying, because I think he gets in there, rolls himself out at some point, and lets it autopilot.
I agree, because, you know, this has created another... Funny enough, like if you go on IMDb, like everybody on there is fucking vapid to begin with, but
yeah,
they created a debate on did he live or did he die? And I do think he lived. You know, it's become like the ending of Inception, you know, did the top fall or didn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's like, oh, how the fuck, how could Batman know where Michael, you know, or how could Bale know where Michael Caine? You know, the cafe that he goes to and, you know, he looks across.
He tells him where it is. He tells him where he went. Like, it doesn't take much for him to find out that Alfred's going to go visit there. And Alfred is probably thinking, you know what?
Well, Alfred told him where he goes.
Exactly. He told him exactly where he goes. And, of course, he's going to find out when he's going there. Because Alfred was probably thinking, you know, Alfred probably put clues together thinking, you know what?
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Everybody is about the ending. I mean, I didn't cry. You know, I didn't. It's like Mercy said, he didn't die. But I'm happy that he didn't die.
Yeah.
And I thought it was much more interesting that he did. He gets
the life that Alfred wanted for him. And if it wasn't real, Anne Hathaway wouldn't have been there. Because Alfred never actually met her.
No.
To know what she like really looked like. He saw a picture, a mugshot. That was it.
How could he know what she looks like? But or know that they were, you know, starting a relationship.
Exactly.
And it was very clever of Nolan because he was the ending to me almost felt like, and I said this earlier in the movie chat, was he was tipping his hat off to the next director.
Yeah.
Whoever takes over the franchise next to say, I'm not going to make this a cry fest. I'm going to say here. You know, this is how I want to finish it. Batman lives, the story goes on, and, you know, best of luck to you.
I mean, you can easily continue it with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
You could if you wanted to. You don't
need Bruce Wayne. I mean, you can tell a different story of someone else as Batman or someone else as something else. But, I mean, you know, they're always thinking about if it's going to make money, understandable. But, you know, but there are other things like, you know, there are hints to those characters that knew of his double identity, that he was still alive. Like, Morgan Freeman finds out about the autopilot was fixed by Bruce Wayne.
And so he's thinking, the pearls weren't in the, were missing.
Yeah, the pearls were missing. Which, you know what, Alfred probably could have worked, he was alive out from that easily enough. But then there's also, the bat signal's fixed when Gordon's there. Yeah. He's thinking,
who would have fixed that? Yeah,
well, who else is going to fix it? Exactly.
But no, I thought it was a great ending. Actually, funny enough, one of my absolute favorite shots of the movie was the very last one with Gordon step platform.
Mm.
rising up, and then it just goes to black.
I know. I was ready for a whole nother movie at that point of him becoming, like, the new hero, and then it goes, ends with the, it just ends. I'm like, oh, I wanted another one.
Actually, even though this movie goes for, like, 2 hours and 45 minutes, I wanted it to be longer, because for a movie like this, even though I feel like I said before, it rushes a bit too much, but it's well-paced. Like, it doesn't lag or drag at all, which I found. Yeah. To be honest, I would love if it was longer. I'd love to see if there was, I mean, even though Nolan had final cut on this movie and pretty much one was like, do whatever you want with this movie, I would love to see if there is, like, you know, maybe like a longer version out there. Not necessarily like an hour's worth, maybe like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes worth of scenes that were cut out. And maybe some of the, if there were, maybe some of those scenes might fix up some of the problems I had, well, the little problems I had with the film in terms of its plot and characters. But other than that, like, I think overall, I think it is a great end to the series. And I mean, we're never going to have a series like this ever again. And God help the next. Yeah, well, not for a while, and God help the next person who's going to make the next Batman movie, because they have a lot to live up to.
Yeah, but can't always expect it's going to be like this. That's the thing. I mean, this is what everyone kind of thinks. These are great, but you know what? This works for what they're telling. It's not going to work for everything else. And I think they proved that with Marvel making, you know, their movies. They're not fucking dark as shit. They're fun. They're bright movies. And it works for that, you know what I mean?
It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. That you don't need, everything doesn't have to bloody be dark.
Yeah.
You know, Avengers proved it doesn't need to be. Not even Avengers. Iron Man, Thor, Captain America. Mm. I mean,
they don't add up.
The Incredible Hulk was kind of dark, but the Hulk probably had more of a... It's kind of dark anyway. Dark. You know, so that worked for that. So, you know...
That was... Like when I was saying to you the other week, Marcy, one of the problems I had with The Amazing Spider-Man, because they were trying to make it dark when they
could have
easily...
I didn't really feel that it was dark, though.
Oh, well, maybe not dark, but try to, like, you know, take a Batman Begins approach by making it grounded and realistic, which...
Well, I didn't think it was at all grounded and realistic. Like, it wasn't realistic at all.
I don't think so either. Even the web shooters, I thought it was like, yeah, that's not possible. Move on.
The reason they added that is because they kind of went for, you know, the comics, that's what he does. He
I mean, the tone felt a bit more serious, but, you know, that's just me.
It wasn't serious, though. It wasn't,
it was
like,
just well written, to be honest with you. I just thought the original trilogy was so cartoony, and, you know, I and the characters were so cliched, and I mean, I still love the original trilogy, but it was just so refreshing to have comic book characters in something like Spider-Man that actually could think for themselves and didn't need, you know, other people to, you know, like, there's no damsel in distress. There's no, I love that side of it.
Oh, well, I don't want to make this like another.
Yeah, because we're
going to
wrap up. Your point doesn't count. See ya.
I'm just saying, like you were saying, Marcy, not all comic book movies need to be dark and gritty or grounded or realistic. That's what I was saying about why I didn't think, for me, that movie worked, because they were trying to do that, where they could have easily just made it more in the tone of something like The Avengers or Iron Man or something. But
to me, it felt more like that. It didn't. I don't think that movie was dark at all.
I kind of disagree, but that, you know, that's a whole different story, and, you know, that's a whole different podcast right there. But I think whoever makes the next Batman movie should just make it, try not to like ape Nolan or anything, just like do their own thing. I mean, I wouldn't mind going back to the sort of stylized like Batman of, like, you know, the Burton-esque.
Well, you know what? If they want to do Justice League, it can't be fucking realistic as hell, because you're going to need Superman, who's an alien. And even with that, I mean, that movie's not, you know, they're going to deal with aliens.
Yep.
Then you have Wonder Woman, who's whose heritage is not exactly, I mean, that's kind of, not that it has anyone has anything to do with the other, but, you know, that approach is kind of like with, say, Thor, more mythological in those senses. And
they can't
then,
make a Justice League movie out, you know, with Nolan's Batman. They can't make
it. No, because it's not in set in that universe. I mean, you have Green Lantern, again, there's alien stuff going on with him, and whoever else you want to include is, say, if you have Aquaman, you know, he comes from the sea.
Seabad.
Although if you do Aquaman, I mean, take a page from the new DC 52, because they've actually written a really good character with Aquaman. I would suggest, you know, actually reading that, and you can get the trades, I think, for at least the first six issues to check that out. But I'm not going to be, you know.
One thing, one last little thing. I think, I want to give a quick shout out to Wally Pfister, the cinematographer. He does another brilliant job cinematography-wise in The Dark Knight Rises. And I think I've heard the other day that this will be his last film as the cinematographer.
Oh, really?
And that he's going to focus more on directing from now on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think, if you're going to do, like, your last cinematography job on a movie, I don't think you can get any better than The Dark Knight Rises.
Basically.
Go out with a bang, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him taking another one for this, for sure. But, I mean, and then Hans Zimmer's score just...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that made it so, incredibly epic.
That guy, I can't even imagine what he's going to do with Man of Steel. I'm so excited.
But we all know it's going to be awesome no matter what it is, because Hans Zimmer is, awesome.
Yeah, I trust in what he would bring to the Man of Steel. I kind of had this conversation yesterday. You know, Superman comes with probably one of the most iconic pieces of music ever. And when you're redoing that, you absolutely cannot use that music. You're doing something completely different. And I trust that Zimmer will make something, you know, just as memorable and something that works for the film. I mean, it is going to be strange not hearing that music associated with Superman, but it's going to be something different.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, it actually makes me kind of happy because it's time to move on.
Exactly.
The character,
which is,
you know,
with Returns, it needed to be completely fresh, and it wasn't.
It wasn't. And I'm sorry that Bryan Singer couldn't quite pull it off.
It's not that he couldn't do what he wanted to do.
No, he couldn't. And
we
that's
know who
why
to blame for that.
I think Man of Steel has the best chance because it's fresh. It's from the beginning. And it has such an incredible group behind it. I mean, Zack Snyder is still a very good director. I mean, when he's not trying to over-stylize the shit out of everything, which was another thing I loved. There wasn't a single slow-mo shot in a freaking teaser, but you know,
it was edited by Terrence Malick, I'm pretty sure.
It was shot by Terrence Malick.
Sweet Laundry and all that.
It was Tree of Life too.
Although people seem to forget, even though I do love Zack Snyder and I think he is a great director, but some of the films where he's very stylized were movies kind of like that that needed that type of style. But
I think 300, it suited it.
Yeah,
Watchmen,
it suited those
he
films.
Toned a lot of that down.
Yeah,
and again, Watchmen is an incredibly dark story, so it's going to be an incredibly dark film. That is completely, you know, that they wouldn't have even been thinking about Batman being dark or anything. So,
when you watch that teaser, all I hear is Nolan. Mm-hmm. Like that, it just screams Nolan, because you think to yourself, oh, why is Superman trying to hitch a ride on a truck? You know, in the teaser, and you're thinking to yourself, well, it's more like Superman in a world that doesn't want him, and he's trying to be more like a man and less of a god, you know, and less of an alien.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's a lot to it,
and this is kind of what annoyed the shit out of me yesterday. Is that, he's out there finding himself. It's just, it's going to be Batman Begins again. I'm like, how the fuck do you know he's out there finding himself? How do you know he's not out there hiding from the world rather than finding himself?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but you don't fucking know. Maybe you can complain and whinge about it when you know more instead of just bitching about it now. It's a teaser. It's teasing. We're not seeing anything. It's completely stupid to get so worked up about a fucking teaser. There are more important things in this world than getting angry at a fucking teaser. That shows us nothing.
Oh, Marcy, trolling.
Breathe, Marcy.
I'm
trolling.
But we love Marcy when she trolls.
Yeah, but am I trolling? No. I'm just telling people to shut the fuck up and relax over a fucking teaser. Maybe go fucking bitch about real problems.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I can't wait for, Man of Steel, because I wouldn't say I'm the biggest Superman fan, but I am looking forward to this. And not just because, you know, Zack Snyder and Nolan are behind it, but just like it's going to be like you say, Marty, it's going to be a different take on the character. It's going to be fresher. And that's what I hope for. I just hope it ends up being a pretty awesome movie.
We all know why I'm excited, because it's Superman and anything associated with Superman, I'm all over it. You know, I'm kind of like, I'm not going to go overly excited or be bagging on it or anything. I'm just going to anticipate my Superman movie. And I can't go either way on it. I just need to just remain in the middle.
I'm kind of on the side with Beat as well, because I really enjoy Superman, but, you know, and I love Donner's first two films, but Superman to me, in the films in general, has always kind of bored me. Because other than Kryptonite, he's never really had in the films, other than Zod, you know, and all that. And funny enough, Zod makes his return. Well, Snyder actually didn't confirm that at Comic-Con.
But it's going to be him.
Yeah, it's going to be. But
And it's Michael Shannon. So we know already,
I actually think that...
I just don't have a hesitation with that. It's
the most exciting part of the whole film, knowing that Shannon... is playing that.
Well,
it's like, fuck me.
That is something that legitimately excites me about it, because A, he's like easily become one of my more, you know, in the last few years, one of my favorite actors, and he can just do anything. Like, he's so versatile, and he did
he tweeted saying he has a massive fight scene with Mike. You know, I think it's like on Krypton or something like that. Like, he's like, you know, I'm exhausted. You know, I've been fighting Michael Shannon all day. And it's like, fuck yeah, that's awesome.
I would fight Michael Shannon all day. I would probably fight Henry Cavill all day. But I'm talking about different fighting, by the way.
I'd fight Amy Adams, but like you say, Marcy.
Hell, even I would fight Amy Adams. We'll just wrestle or something.
I think every single woman in Hall H at Comic-Con on Saturday just wanted to jump on the stage and rip Henry's clothes off, like where he stood.
Actually, Nick, while you're here talking about Comic-Con, you actually got a chance to see the extended trailer, I guess, of Superman, didn't you? Of Man of Steel, did you see it or?
I actually didn't, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I only seen like a very, very, very badly put.
Bootleg. I didn't see or hear anything on that bootleg. So.
I could hear the grandness of the movie based on the
audio. You were just weird.
Yeah, they showed a lot more at Hall H. Unfortunately, I couldn't get into Hall H that day, but they did show a lot more footage. They actually showed a shot of Shannon. It was very quick.
Yeah, that's what I got.
They showed a little bit of the action. They showed... a lot of the Superman stuff, is including him, you know, zooming into the ground and then woof, right up in the air. Apparently everything that everyone saw was just fucking epic. And the teaser is nothing.
Yeah, exactly. There's no point in getting up in arms about anything because we haven't seen anything really.
Yeah. And we'll probably get another trailer that's more in the vein of like that Comic-Con footage, probably either at the end of the year or early next year. Yeah.
I think the end of the year with the big movies coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was meant to come out at the end of this year. I'm like, I know I'm gutted that we have to wait, you know, almost a year for it. But if waiting means that we're going to get a better film, I'm all for that.
I'm all for that too.
And yeah.
The more time spent on it, the better it will be, you know, so if they have any problems in that, they can fix them out instead of having to rush.
Delays aren't necessarily a bad thing, and people kind of just jump on the bad mic and that it is a bad thing. Well, it's not. Before we go,
Hopefully World War Z doesn't...
I want to ask Nick one last thing, just going back to Comic-Con stuff.
Yep.
Did you go to the Expendables 2 panel?
What a show that was.
I mean, obviously that kind of got shadowed by Sage Stallone passing away.
Yeah, and that hadn't happened
Sylvester.
At that point.
Yeah, it happened the next day. And obviously it's sad that Stallone lost his son.
And it's the thing, because the Expendables 2, all the panels and the red car, everything was such a huge success for him.
Yeah, and for that to happen, I mean, obviously we definitely send our condolences out to Stallone, because we're all very big fans of his.
Yep.
But, you know, I would imagine that this will maybe come with a, you know, in memory of his son. I don't know. I just kind of maybe assume that could happen. But you would have obviously seen some footage. What were you thinking about that?
About the footage they showed?
Yeah. I mean, I'm staying away from it, but I would just want to get, like, your thoughts on it.
I thought it was... I mean, what they primarily showed was the scene that we've seen in the trailer, which is them at the airport during the big shootout. There's a great moment. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but there's a great moment with Chuck Norris laying down cover fire over the group. And the impression I get from the cast and from the clips and everything is that this is going to be an epic fucking action movie. I think this one's going to put the first one to shame. The fact that Simon West, the director, has already confirmed that it's going to be a hard R in its rating and everything like that. I think every character is going to get their moment in the sun with this. I mean, some people may think that, you know, regurgitating the one-liners from all their movies, you know, their classics is
love that, though.
I fucking love it.
Who doesn't love it?
You know, hearing Bruce Willis say, you know, I'll be back, or, you know, shit like that, it's like, that's awesome for me. And the crowd just ate it up, and Arnie told some hilarious stories. He soaked up the Hall H crowd. I was not expecting it.
Well, he's always been a very, like, charismatic person.
He is. And I mean, he and Stallone obviously have a very close friendship. Yeah. And,
well, they went to hospital together for their shoulders or whatever it was.
I met, Dolph Lundgren and all them briefly on the press line, and everybody was very excited about it, and fucking just a blast. I think it's going to be really fun.
Awesome. Yeah, because we've gone, like, probably 20 minutes over than I wanted us to. We'll wrap it up and thank all of our listeners, and thanks for joining us, and... we will be back. We're not too long away from episode 100, so keep an eye out for that. And I might tease that one of our next commentaries is going to be a film starring Arnold. And it's a film that it's an original classic, but it has been recently remade. So I'll leave you guys with that. And thanks once again. Catch you later.
Bye.
See everyone.